This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
BTBN Play. Sega!
Hey everybody, welcome back to PTBN Play on the PTBN Pop Feed. This is Brad. I got Jordan with me today. Jordan, how are you?
I am great. Just finished playing some video games, believe it or not.
Yes, I did also. I always like to kind of to warm up for these top four lists as we're going through, and I kind of play the system ahead of time to, I don't know, maybe see if I can jog some old nostalgia,
right,
or whatnot. So
see, we're a little different though. I was playing Fortnite, so.
Oh, I see. So that's why we had a very strict start time for this, because you were playing Fortnite. There was a certain window in there. I get it. You get to take advantage of your windows.
Yeah. I'm prepping for 20 episodes from now for our PS4 countdown.
Or maybe our Fortnite podcast, right? You could bring the boys in.
We could do that.
You could get
a big get one of these that are 14 years old and make.
You know, I bet that would draw. Actually, we're all about draws, right? So. I bet that would draw.
Push who the crowd wants.
That's right. That's right. So everybody, you heard me kind of drop it before. Maybe I didn't. So we're going to be talking about our top four Sega Genesis games today. If you listen to the series so far, we've covered the Atari 2600 and the Nintendo, the NES. We need to be specific because we're not old people to just call every video game Nintendo. Yeah. But we do refer to the original as like Nintendo.
Yes,
so,
because that's what that one was.
Yes. So not the company, but that's what it was. So we have made our way into the 16-bit era, and a lot of good talking points tonight here as we are going to go through our top four and kind of talk about some of our experiences with the system. So, Jordan, I'll start with you. When we were kids, it maybe wasn't where like you had both, right? But what was your experience with the Sega Genesis? And then we'll kind of talk about, you know, maybe a little bit in the Super Nintendo only, into kind of foreshadowing our next show.
Sure. Well, we wound up with both eventually. But Genesis came first in our house. So that's why, I guess I have fonder memories of the Genesis, but I don't know. As we were discussing off air, this list was kind of hard for me to come up with four lists that really stand out above the rest. And I don't know if that speaks positively or negatively. My top two are definitely my number one and two. But after that, my three and four made the list, but my 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 all could have made the list too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and part of it is, you know, as we'll discuss, a lot of these games are available on both systems. But Genesis was first in our household, and so it was our first 16-bit system. So, of course, there was that little blown-away factor to it. You know, Sonic was our first game, and seeing the bright colors and just the speed of Sonic the Hedgehog compared to Mario, which I think was done on purpose, you know.
Sure.
It did have kind of that same effect of going from Atari to Nintendo. Of that, wow, this is crazy. It's never going to get better than this. Of course it did. But, you know, as a kid, you thought, like, this was the peak. This is as good as it will ever get. You know, and there's two of them now. You know, there's the Super Nintendo and the Genesis.
Right.
Which did, as a kid, it made it a little tougher. Because if you ever trade games with friends or anything like that and borrow games, like,
sure,
you had to find friends who had the right systems, you know. So,
well, and that impacted which one you bought too. I mean, you know, my buddy, he had a Genesis, and that's why I had a heavy Genesis influence. In fact, we didn't have a Super Nintendo. I had played it, but we didn't have one until my sister got one, and that was more in like the mid to like late 90s, where it was certainly sunsetting as a system, but still had some life. I mean, it's still played today, and you know, for certain reasons, but right. Yeah, we were a heavy Genesis household, and I think that played off of just the availability. And then, you know, my neighbor across the street, after school we get off the bus and like run to his house and play like as much as possible before I had like run all the way back home before my mom got home from work. So you know, I did that pretty much like every day. So those games are pretty etched into my mind. But that's where And so we had, the Genesis was, You know, I talked a little bit in our previous show about, you know, kind of buying a Nintendo at a yard sale, and the Genesis was the first one where I had scrapped together the money and was like, Mom, Funko Land's having a sale on pre-owned Genesises, and my neighbor who had tipped me off to it, and I still couldn't believe, like, that, like, I convinced her in, like, that little of a speech, and she was like, okay, we'll go on, like, Friday afternoon, and I was like, wow, it's amazing. So, she's probably just tired of, like, fighting against having a console in the house,
right?
You know, and so she finally gave in, and we got a Genesis 1, the older model, which had the best audio, but it was a pretty wonky pre-owned system. Yeah. Like, I don't think today I would have, like, settled for it, but as, like, a 14 or 15-year-old that bought it, I was like, that'll work, you know? So I had my Madden 94. It's ready to go.
Yeah, so, you know, one thing I think, too, I almost wonder if Genesis played to, you know, when Super Nintendo came out, you had Super Mario World was kind of like the launch system with the game, or launching mm-hmm. game with the system, but it's still Mario. And I almost wonder with Sega, like, Sonic was brand new, you know, and so just kind of the appeal of something new and something different. I wonder if that swayed anyone. I'm sure it had to have, right?
Yeah, and they beat him in the market by 2 years in the U.S. I mean, the Genesis was out in, like, 89, 90, and then it was out in 89, so, you know, the Super Nintendo wasn't until 91.
And I don't think we had a Genesis, though, till 91, 92.
Yeah.
I mean, my guess.
Yeah, it was because the Master System had, like, so little foothold in the U.S. Mm-hmm. that it took a while, and it really did take Sonic to come in, and that was really the tipping point, you know, for the system.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, big fan of Sega, though.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And I stuck with it for a while. So, and actually, after we talk about our top four Genesis today, and we'll weave in some other talking points, mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk about some of the accessories that came with the Genesis in that 16-bit era. So, Jordan, let's start with your number four. And like I said, we'll kind of talk through and maybe some small tangents as we go through things.
Sure. My number four is a game that I wonder if this was available on Super Nintendo. I was going to say it's the only one that wasn't, but as I'm just thinking about it now, I bet that it was. But Genesis had this unique little line of games that were Disney movie properties, and they were all very, very fun, and I chose Disney's Aladdin as my number four. Do you know offhand if that was available for Super Nintendo?
So it was, but it was a completely different game. So that's a great pick, because the Genesis version is the better one.
Yes,
it is the superior version. And that's a fantastic game and a great pick. And yeah, it was actually made by completely different companies.
Okay.
You know, that had the license for. So it wasn't like like EA's making it for both. It was made. It was developed by someone completely different for the Super Nintendo.
See, this is what I trust you with. You do the heavy lifting. I mentioned the name. You give us the history. But yeah, Aladdin was a really fun game. And if I could say one thing that speaks positively about how good of a game it was, that came out where I was at an age where, you know, Aladdin wasn't really that cool for my age group to admit to liking. You know, like, we saw it, but we didn't admit to our friends that we went and saw
sure.
Aladdin. But we proudly played the Aladdin video game. Like
it was a good game.
Like, I'm going to put my neck out because this game is worth playing. You know, I'm not going to hide it when my friends come over. It's an excellent game. It had a great soundtrack, which, you know, obviously was just tunes, you know, from the movie, but they sounded good. And it was a tough game, too. You know, it was challenging. It wasn't, frustratingly difficult like some of the NES games we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
But it was challenging to the point where sometimes you could get through it and sometimes you'd really struggle, like the Magic Carpet Ride level, you know. It wasn't just simply memorizing patterns. There was some randomness to it that would really make you scream and yell sometimes. But yeah, Jafar was tough to beat. It's just a really good game. Maybe one of the best movie ports ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, from a licensing standpoint, sometimes that can mean like the game is DOA.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, you know, the movie's coming out. They're going to slap the Aladdin license on it. But it's got terrific gameplay. Mm-hmm. And was a good hit, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's not on my list, but Lion King, very similar too. Yeah, and I want to say maybe Hercules or one other. There was like a trio of them. I can't remember.
I think Jungle Book was the trio.
Jungle Book, yep.
Yeah, Hercules was PS1.
Yep.
Yeah, it was the because they actually released them for, if anybody is a PC gamer nowadays and uses good old games GOG.com, mm-hmm. they actually re-released those three games, the Aladdin, Lion King, Jungle Book trio,
oh, excellent.
To play on like current, you know, PC gaming today.
I do believe
and, that. And I haven't got it yet because it must have been an expensive license to bring back, right? Because you're dealing with Disney and, mm-hmm. and yeah, all those three games are kind of in the same vein by the same developers. I remember playing Lion King, and I played I played Aladdin a lot. It didn't make my list. I didn't have it, but definitely was better on the Genesis, and that's a really cool pick.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that one. How about you? What's your number four, man?
So my number four is X-Men for the Sega Genesis.
And
so
honorable mentions.
Yeah, so this is last time when we talked about Nintendo, it was kind of like new experiences or things you wanted to find in games. And so in the early 90s, and I've made this talking about before, is like kind of X-Men was kind of like in that like Hulkamania stage of like mm-hmm. comics. And so like everybody knew the animated series and we just wanted to play the games, and the Nintendo games sucked. And so but we played the arcade X-Men game, which was a beat 'em up, you know, four players at a time, just like the Turtles games, and really cool. And so to have like a home platform 16-bit was like, wow, this is going to be it. You can switch between all the X-Men. They had, they had their mutant powers, which is weird because you had to turn them on and it drained their health. But I mean, it was a gameplay aspect of, I'm not sure, you know, how realistic it was, but, that was another thing where it's like, you imagine like how great could this game be? And I remember playing it at my friend's house at first, and eventually I had it too. It was challenging too. And I remember when we had done a 16-bit show a couple years ago, mm-hmm. I'd gone back and played it before, and I was like, wow, this game is still really hard from a platforming standpoint. It wasn't maybe as smooth as what you would like it to be, but the graphics were cool and everybody was in there. And it was just kind of mind blowing on like what the possibilities could be for a comic license in a game.
Right. Yeah. And thinking back to that episode of Rank and File with Andy, we discussed a very interesting moment in that game that frustrated a lot of people. Where you had to.
That's right.
I believe you had to reset the system, correct?
Yeah, you had to power the system off. I think you had to press the power button and turn the power. Or was it hit the reset button or the power button?
One or the other, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the things that makes it essentially like impossible to emulate in right. those sections because right. you need to have the actual cartridge in the system to be able to do that for the cartridge, so it tricks the system and puts it back to where it is. A really cool game technique there. It kind of reminds me of like the Simon's Quest Castlevania 2 thing where you need to do that certain move so you get picked up, and it's like, man, how would I know this if I didn't read this in a magazine? Exactly. It was impossible.
Especially the reset button goes against every natural instinct of a game player. You only do that when someone's about to beat you in a game and you're just
exactly.
a real douche, you know?
Exactly, so. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good
So game. X-Men was my number four, and it, you know, there at the time, so again, with licenses with 16-bit, you know, there were different X-Men games for the Super Nintendo, but not like a straight just X-Men. This was a Genesis only game kind of hitting right in where like it's at its initial big popularity in the US there in like the early 90s.
Yeah, you mentioned it just briefly. If we venture out and do an arcade game countdown, I think the X-Men may have to make my list.
Yeah, it would make mine.
It was so good. That and the Ninja Turtles. And honestly, the Simpsons, all three had really good four-player beat-em-up games in the arcade. So,
yeah, and they, you know, if you're listening and thinking wistfully of these two, and they remade them all for the last generation systems, but due to licensing, you had a very short window where you could buy them online. They were download only. So I remember, like, I have Turtles for the 360, the arcade game.
Oh, wow.
And I have the Simpsons arcade game for the PS3 when they re-released that. It was a short time only when it was available. And they actually had X-Men out there, too. And it's one of my it's kind of dumb to say, but it's like one of my biggest gaming regrets is that for some reason I was like $9.99, and at the time you had to buy like points. You know, nowadays we just put it on our credit card and don't even think about it. But back then I was like, oh, I'll get to get the point. I want to use my points for this, and I never got it. And man, it's such a regret because I really wish I could go back and play that game on a home console, and I don't think it'll ever make its way back. So
probably not.
So that was X-Men. That was my number four. What is your number three?
My number three is also hero-related. I guess I could call him a mutant because he is a guy by the name of Earthworm Jim.
Nice.
Earthworm Jim was a game that came out for, again, both systems, Super Nintendo and Genesis. This one was not that different from system to system. But because I had Genesis first, I played it first on the Genesis. I believe I had Earthworm Jim 2 on the Super Nintendo, just randomly.
Okay.
But Earthworm Jim was a lot of fun, and it was funny. You know, it was a game that incorporated a lot of humor. And if you don't know Earthworm Jim, you're essentially an earthworm in a spacesuit that gives him a body, arms, feet, legs. You know, he shoots a blaster gun, and he's fighting all over the place. But one of the funniest parts of the game is he would use a whip, but he would use himself. Like, so his own body, he'd pull his head out of his suit and whip to, like, swing across vines and things like that, a la Indiana Jones. But beyond the humor, it's just it really is a fun, interesting little game, you know. There's a little bit of puzzling to it, you know. You have to figure out, like, you got to whip this cow here, so later on in the level he'll fall down to the ground and crush this guy. And it's not just your simple, basic side-scroller shoot 'em up. It kind of like Contra last week, where some levels are side-to-side, some levels are kind of an up-and-down space chase and things like that. There's underwater levels. Just a really creative game that I had a lot of fun with. And I don't think I ever finished Earthworm Jim because it was difficult. But it was a very successful game. Spawned a sequel, of course. There was a kid's cartoon show.
I remember the cartoon, yeah.
It all started, for me, with Sega Genesis and Earthworm Jim, a game that we just randomly got. You know, that's the fun thing about games back in the day was you had the money to buy a game and you were going to go and just look at the wall of games. And you didn't know what you were going to get. You know, now, like, I plan this in advance. I know when a game comes out. I know exactly what I'm getting. But back then, it was like, I'm going to get a game this weekend. Which one? I don't know. And Earthworm Jim was one of those random purchases for me that I ended up really, really liking. Maybe we could do a show on ones that we ultimately regret. But
right. This one our worst purchases.
Yeah, I took it home and played it a little bit. It's just a really... really excellent, fun game that I think still holds up too. I'm sure it's probably available somewhere on some sort of port or online system. But very, very fun.
Yeah. Game. So great graphics, right?
Yes.
And to your point about being like appealing, I remember when I got my Genesis, that game was like all the rage.
Oh yeah.
You know, again, it was loud in the sense of. Lot going on. Mm-hmm. He was a charismatic guy, which fit with Sega. But again, it was on Nintendo too. But I always associated with Sega, and I was actually surprised older. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that was on the Super Nintendo. I really thought it was an exclusive IP, which I guess shows to the marketing and branding, or again, the bubble that I was in. I remember that was a huge hit. Great graphics, challenging again. So, like, as a platformer, puzzle platformer, I would call it a puzzle platformer, I think, to your point,
yeah,
with some of the different things you had to do. You know, the controls would probably be challenging or feel a little wonky today. I remember kind of being like, you're kind of like floating and like I'm jumping and pulling back and trying to shoot and all this stuff.
Yeah, it was
so tricky. It had some challenge to it.
Mm-hmm. It definitely did. Some of it intentional, some of it maybe just limitations of the system.
Sure. Yeah, it definitely pushed the I thought it pushed the blast processing and the 16-bit Sega Genesis. And they did release it for PSN for the PS3. I actually have it. And every time, like, you highlight, like, if I scroll through my games, he yells, like, his groovy real loud, so it always, like, scares me, because that's, like, the thumbnail audio that plays on the PS3 when you go through it. Mm-hmm. And it's, it was, that's a great, that is a, you know, sometimes we, on our wrestling shows, they have, like, the most 90s moment. I think Earthworm Jim is, like, the most 90s character.
Oh,
he would make he would be a good argument to be the most 90s guy.
Yeah, I think that's good too, because these other ones, Mario, Sonic, obviously Mario's from the 80s, but you know, they've endured.
They endured. Earthworm Jim did not. He's still in the 90s, I think.
Yeah. Do you remember the princess that you had to save? Do you remember her name?
Oh, something toilet related, right? Am I wrong on that?
If I'm correct, it's Princess What's Her Name.
Oh, that's funny. It had a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor that probably as adults we'd appreciate even more today.
Yeah, that's a game maybe if I revisit it now, I'd probably catch stuff that I totally did not understand at the time.
Yeah, I may have to do that later. That's a good idea. That's a great choice for number three. I definitely think it stands out. If you talked about how a lot of them may muddle together. That one is definitely one that stands out for me too in the 16-bit era.
Yeah. How about your number three?
So my number three is, you name dropped it earlier, but it was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, okay.
And I thought about which one I wanted to go with because, but I think it was just the first one was just so mind blowing to see on a big TV. And I say big, but not relative to the TVs we have today. But, you know, that jump from 8 to 16-bit, it felt like it was more than that. Even though we had seen Mario 3, this was like, this was fast.
Yes.
This was loud again, like I said, like big sprites. And it was just mind-blowing. It really felt like, wow, the Genesis is such a great machine. How could it get better than this? Really good platformer. And it was, you know, I think it was challenging, but I get pretty far in it, you know, and so like it was, I think it had a good difficulty curve to it. And then Sonic the Hedgehog 2 came out, and that was, you know, one of the more so they eventually packed in Sonic the Hedgehog, which is a big deal. And actually my version is still like the not for resale, like pack in clamshell.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then Sonic 2 was a huge release. I mean, they released it on Sonic Tuesday. It was like one of those first, I don't think it was the first, and I don't want to go all gaming historical here, but it was one of the first release dates where they really hyped it up.
Right.
Like, because back in the Nintendo days, you know, we didn't know when games were going to come out. It was not like every Tuesday there's new stuff.
Right.
It was really random. And so, but Sonic Tuesday was a big deal. A huge game, tremendous game. And I toyed with which one I wanted to pick. And I think from the 16-bit on the Genesis, is I probably played a little bit more of one, or at least it was more impactful to me. But then two, you know, I remember playing as Tails and doing the co-op thing. And so those games, you know, I feel like you really have to pay respects to them in this era and when how they carried Sega here. So Sonic 1, in this case, would be my number three. What experience did you have with the games for the system?
Yeah, I think the best word you used to describe it was fast. I mean, Mario 3 was a great game, and it's not like you played Sonic or like, Mario 3 is trash now, but the speed of Sonic, which is funny because it really wasn't the game moving fast because it wasn't so fast that you couldn't keep up with it, but you'd hit those little springs, you know, and you'd just fly through the thing. It really just was like showing off, look what we can do with the system. And, you know, I think it was a perfect kind of, this is our big game, this is our big launch, this is what we're going to base this system around. And, I had a lot of fun with it. Like you said, it's challenging enough to where a kid could beat it, but not easily. One thing I loved about Sonic that I thought was unique that you don't see in a lot of games still to this day is kind of like the life system. It's not a health bar, it's just your rings.
Yeah.
As long as you've got a ring, you can live. You know, you could have like 90 rings, get hit once, and you lose all of them, but you can go run around and pick up 40, 50 of them, and you're
right.
Fine again, which I thought that was another really cool touch. Like,
that's a very cool system. I remember being a heavy portable player is that on the Game Gear version is, I guess, for limitations in the system, if you got hit, you could only pick up like one coin. So it was more challenging, but that was a cool system too. And I'll remember too, is that I think we all, you know, first developed our fear of drowning from Sonic the Hedgehog 1.
Yeah.
So you had a health bar, he started to like turn blue and you had to like get an air bubble and work. Yep. And those levels were very stressful. Yeah. And so that was the first I had ever experienced something like that.
Yeah. I think with Genesis too, like what's funny is if I think of sounds of Genesis, the two sounds of Genesis are Sega, and then you know, like the Sonic music kicking in right after that Sega is Genesis. You know, that's Genesis for everyone. Even though it's not, you know, my number one or number two, it's the Genesis game. You know, I had it on my list, bumped it for Aladdin. You know?
Okay. Yeah,
but not because it's not a game that has an age well or anything like that. It's a great game, and I would have ranked Sonic 1 as well. I did the same thing as you. Do I rank Sonic and Knuckles, Sonic and Tails? But I think Sonic 1 is the one that kind of still holds the magic.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And it's the one actually I've played since then. Again, another 360 arcade port was a really nice, good version of the game. And actually, you can get that game on the 3DS download. It's all over the place. Sega does a pretty good job at remarketing their old material, and they've squeezed every dollar out of Sonic the Hedgehog. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on.
Oh, okay.
But So for Sonic 3, I never played. I have it, and I'm trying to figure out when I got it. But I don't remember ever playing it. And Sonic and Knuckles, like, I remember thinking how cool it was. It was Sonic and Knuckles, as you know, you put that. It was a different cartridge. You put that thing in, and then you could put the game on top, and you could go back and play like Sonic 1 as Knuckles, which is a really cool achievement at the time. I don't remember ever actually playing those games. I think that I had kind of moved into it's something I'm going to talk about a little bit with some games that are coming up shortly for me, is that I moved kind of through, like, regular gaming, moved more to PC for me then. So when Sonic 3 was coming out, I was like, I'm playing games on the computer versus that time for Sonic. So
sure, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, with me, I didn't. I kind of was out of Sonic by then because of the next two games on my list.
Okay. And what's your number two?
My number two is one that I know you are quite the fan of. In fact, when we did a rank and file, you sang its praises. I went with NBA Jam.
Very nice.
Yes, NBA Jam for the Genesis, of course. Another game that is available on both, but for some reason... And you know what I think it is? You keep using the word loud, and I think loud fits the Genesis and loud fits NBA Jam. I think they just matched up a little better. And I'm ranking the original NBA Jam, not Tournament Edition, because this was a game that I remember playing in the arcade, and when I heard that it was coming to home systems, I was dying. Just dying for this game. Could not wait for it. This is a game that, like you said, we didn't know release dates and stuff like that, but you knew it was coming. Like, we would have games like, well, obviously not Nintendo Power, but, like, I think it was EGM is what I read back then. Electronic
Sure. Game Monthly. Electric. Yeah, it's a good magazine.
And it would kind of give, like, little teases of games, and you're like, you know, just like, when, you know, but when NBA Jam came out, it lived up to the hype. And this is one, my first one, you know, when we did Atari, I said I didn't list arcade versions, arcade games, because the arcade versions were better. What made NBA Jam such a great home console is, if you remember the arcade system, you'd have to pay money per quarter.
Oh, yeah.
So pay for the first quarter, pay for the second quarter. So if it's 50 cents each, you're paying $2 to play a game. Whereas here,
play the Mavericks, the worst team game.
Yeah,
too.
And you got to play, so you got to play what? There probably wasn't 30 teams back then, but, you know, 24, 25 NBA teams. So, oh, gosh, but... Yeah, just a great game that, I mean, if you know it, you know every catchphrase. If not, if I said something like Boom Shakalaka, you're like, what is wrong with this guy? But yeah. What else was awesome about NBA 2 was all, like, the secret codes and stuff. You know, the secret players, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, just by putting in their initials, you know. I believe Warren Moon was in the game for Genesis. who else was in there? Man, I should have looked this up. I remember you could be some, like, the game designs, but who cared about that? But Al Gore and I remember were big ones to unlock. And then you had Big Head Mode, Powered Up Dunks. Gosh, there was so much stuff in this. But if you really want to hear someone praise NBA Jam properly, listen to our rank and file, again, that I've already mentioned once. This is a nice companion piece to the file episode, by the way.
Yes, sir.
You, I, and Andy Helene sat down and talked about all 16-bit games, not just Genesis, but 16-bit games overall. But NBA Jam was such a great game because I didn't mind playing it by myself for a couple hours, but if friends came over, it was even better. I remember we'd make our brackets, you know, when we'd have our tournaments all day long. It's awesome, awesome game.
And it worked, and it appealed to non-sports gamers, too, because it was an arcade game.
Yes.
And that wasn't always bridge gaming fine to find that. So, I love the arcade game. That was another huge release when it came out. I had it for the Game Gear. I don't want to spoil our future portable show, although I just did. It's going to be on there, and I'll probably talk more about it then. Because from a home 16-bit, I mean, I had it at home then, you know, maybe after it came out for a couple years. And I actually, at one time a couple years ago, had a pretty good collection of every NBA Jam game for every system ever. Wow. And I think it was only missing, and some of the Nintendo 64 ones were NBA Jam in only name only. They actually were not like the old arcade games, but all the derivatives that came after, like Hang Time all those ones. Like, I had all of those for every system, or NBA Jam Extreme for the Sega Saturn was one. And so I love that series too. And on the 16-bit, you may hear me talk about that on a different show later on. Okay. But that's a tremendous, tremendous pick and another kind of big staple and name from the 16-bit era.
Yeah, did you have a go-to team?
Let me think about it. Seattle was one that I played. Oh, no, and then I think I'm trying to think. Gosh, it must have been Charlotte too, right?
With Larry, yeah. And you could be. I think Muggsy was an option.
NBA, right? The first one you couldn't change, but I played tournament a lot of tournament edition where
that's
you could
when you had
sub
five or six guys. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember. Because I was a Sixers fan and they were terrible. Like those teams are just not good, and so. I could never play as my home team in there, but I was a huge NBA fan, and I played Charlotte, and now I'm trying to – that's a really good question.
Yeah. One thing I do remember about the original for Genesis compared to the arcade was Shaq was in the arcade, and he was not on the original Genesis game.
Correct, yep.
I'm guessing –
and Jordan wasn't on any of them.
Yeah.
But there's actually and the guy, the designer, was pretty active on social media, and – he's been brought in for other projects when they've done NBA Jam re-releases. There was recently an article where he has a beta of the game that he was showing around that has Jordan in it. Because, course, he had to take him out for licensing. But there was, you know, obviously he had built it with Jordan originally in it before he pulled himself out. Same thing with Barkley. I want to say he was in the arcade version. I'm not as sharp and fresh with my NBA Jam history as I was like 5 years ago.
I remember the team that I hated being was what team was Christian Laettner on? Whoever he was,
the Timberwolves. Right? Yeah.
They were garbage. So, but yeah, NBA and, you know, is my number.
When I mentioned the Mavericks too, was that the whole crutch of the single player game was that you had to work your way through from number 30 or what, however many teams there were back then, 28 to number one. So you always had to start the same, and you could save. They gave you codes, and you actually you use your initials, right? So it saved your progress on the home console. So that was cool, but the game was challenging too.
Yeah.
And so you had to start. But if you played in the arcade, you had to play like the freaking Mavericks every time, and you keep chugging quarters in. So unless you were playing somebody else,
yeah, it was rough. Mavericks, ugh.
Fun game. I think
not the Mavericks that we know. Nowitzki actually.
No, this is
Mavericks.
This
is like
these were bad Mavericks. Like I think Jimmy Jackson was on that team, right?
So yeah, not the best.
And I think that's where I learned with sports games was kind of the elasticity of I'm down by 20, but now I'm making all my shots because the game was an arcade game.
Yep.
Sometimes you see that like early Mario Kart games, right? And you could turn it off in future EA sports games, which you may talk about, where comeback mode was on. It's like you get down and the game kind of bumps you back up to make it, you know, arcade competitive and fun. So it definitely had that going for it, too. You really grind it out like you were sweating every second of that game. That's for sure.
Yeah, great game though, and I knew you would. I knew you're a fan of that from our previous conversations. So
yep, for sure.
I was thinking it might even come up on your list. I don't really know, but we'll see.
It's not on my list for Genesis because I'm saving it. So
got it. Perfect.
But my number two is going to be NHL 94. So
yes,
the Genesis for me was, we talked about with Nintendo and kind of our, you know, I was a big sports game player. And so that was where I was recreating everything that I watched or read about in the newspaper. And so the 16-bit era was just, this is what I did. And so when I went back to look at my list, what made it challenging was that I really played sports games like 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to do a top 10 just sports games, like I could do that in a second. And so whittling down for this list made it hard, which is why I split things up over other 16-bit systems that I may have played it on. But NHL for me was, so 93 was really the first one I had played. And, you know, I knew the game, but I didn't really know a lot about it. It was much more in the basketball. We didn't have cable, so I didn't really watch the Flyers that much. Mm-hmm. But when, like, Lindros came along, like, I got really into it. And as I got older, too, right, so it was easier to become more accessible. Let me learn about this. Let me stay up later and watch this or, you know, read about it in the newspaper. And so, but this game was kind of – I kind of fell in love with the game from there. So I'm not as into hockey today as I was like 15 years ago.
Sure.
But this was the companion to the Flyers in the 90s that made this game for me. And so 94 was no season mode. It was still playoffs only. You had one-timers. You had a great roster. You know, it's the game that they remake with new rosters nowadays. I have a retro cart made of the NHL 12 rosters that I can play awesome. On the Sega Genesis, so and it has all the games. They hacked it, like we talked about with Tecmo Super Bowl. And so 94 is the game that they tweaked all the gameplay on and tightened it up so it was more realistic. And I played that game. I'm pretty confident. The one downside to it was that if you were a bad team, you skated slow.
Yes.
So that was, like, not good, right? Because that's not realistic.
Right.
But so you never wanted to play as Anaheim, who was, like, an expansion team, because they were just dreadfully slow.
Mm-hmm.
But the better you were, the faster you skated, it seemed, or the faster that you had more agility. And so, but I think I played through, I played through the Cup with maybe, like, 90% of the teams in that game.
Yeah, and that was the challenge, you know.
yeah, that was the challenge. It's like, all right, I'm going to go through as the Islanders now.
Right.
You know, and you know, you would lose some in there. It would be close. You know, I remember, you know, Pavel Bure and Timo Salani, who is now retired, but Jesus, yeah. Like 5 years ago, he's still going. And you remember playing as him in that game as like a rookie on Winnipeg, who's back now as a franchise. Yeah. So, and so 94 was the... I think just that sport, like through that system, like I said, there's a lot of sports games I could talk about. I played a ton of sports games with non-sports game friends too. You had like your sports talk baseball and football like my neighbor had Mutant League hockey and Mutant League football. So like he wasn't into sports, but like he was into that stuff. So we could play those games, which were cool. But sitting down to just kind of play this even solo a lot, like 94 that was my jam.
Yeah, it was a good game. So. That was on my honorable mentions as well, for a lot of the same reasons you listed. What's interesting is I was never really a hockey fan, but man, I love this game.
Right.
Which is funny because I grew up in, quote, hockey town, and I grew up around a great franchise, you know, but don't really care. So I have a question that I'm sure you will know the answer to.
Yeah.
Was it 93 or 92 where it was NHLPA, where they had the players' names but not the team names?
Yeah, that was up to 93.
Okay.
So 92 and 93 had just the names and you could
fight.
So
this is the first one with the teams.
Yeah, this is the first one with the teams and the names and no fighting, which was a big deal at the time until they finally brought it back a couple years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
know, everything you said, gosh, it's one of those games I haven't played in years, so I had it in my honorable mention, but I'm like, I can't really think of what to say about it. But as you're discussing, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah, I remember that the bad teams were super slow and it was very frustrating. Gosh, yeah. So this is a fun game that I spent a lot of time with. Didn't make my list because it was fun at the time, but I don't have those like vibrant memories of it, you know, so
right,
to speak.
Right.
But it was a great game. One funny thing about Genesis sports games was, you know, you had a sports game where the cartridge is like almost double the size with a big yellow tab on the side.
Sure, the EA staple with the big cases and the
that's how you knew
in
you
some
had
cases
a game
for those pre-94 ones, they had big cases and big carts to be to kind of set themselves apart.
Yeah.
You know, my one last anecdote on 94 was that you know in recent years when they would release like their new game, they would call back to it sometimes. Some games they would have like an old version of the game on there, or they could have NHL 94 like control mode. And so like, okay, pass and shoot were just two buttons. But what always bugged me was that they never brought back like the A button was kind of like your flip. So
yes.
You could flip it down the ice. And look, I always played with offsides on because that was part of the challenge. Even in the game today, when you play, is that one, you're going to play aggressive, so you're going to draw a ton of penalties. So you're pretty much going to be playing 5-on-4 when you're the man down, which makes it pretty even against the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But I always kept offsides on because that also made it pretty challenging. You had to play like legit and set up plays and stuff, and you could do one-timers. And so, but that flip button, just to be able to clear it on a power play or to just scoop it ahead of whoever, like I always thought that was so cool, and they never emulated and brought that back to the game. Even when they mocked the controls and brought it back, they never did it. And I know the Super Nintendo version, you know, had that too, but
Yeah, it's funny. As you're talking about it, I'm just having more memories. And I remember frustratingly turning icing off many times.
Sure. That was the other thing. You get icing on, you couldn't get away with flipping it down like that. And then you could turn offsides on and off too. And penalties too was the other one. Like penalties overall. Like offsides was a different one than just penalties. You could keep penalties but keep offsides off. But if you turn them all on, man, you can check. You that was a huge highlight, was, you know, all these huge hits that you could do and leave guys
like in a pool of blood.
Right, in a pool of blood. You couldn't fight, but you could knock them pretty good, or knock, you know, Lindros's head off. And but you'd be in the box all the time. But it was fun, man. It was a good time, that's for sure.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I suspected that may be your number one, actually, just from remembering you talk. I actually remember you saying
I waffled on it a little bit.
I do remember you saying you had the port with the fairly current rosters still.
Yeah.
So cool. All right. So that's your number two, correct? Which leaves us with just one each. You want me to go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So my number one is, again, available on both systems. But if you lived at this time, there was no question you had to get the Sega Genesis version. This is probably the game that defines Genesis for me, because I said I had Genesis before Super Nintendo, and I was one of the few in my neighborhood that did. Most of my friends had Super Nintendo, which made it hard to trade and things like that. But when this game came out, suddenly my house was the place to be, Brad.
Okay, I like that. Very good.
Everyone came over, because only on the Sega Genesis did you have blood on Mortal Kombat 2.
That's right.
Yep. The blood and the fatalities were ready and available. Super Nintendo toned it down a bit. Didn't have blood. You would hit a guy in the head and the throat and sweat would fly off. But Genesis gave us the game as we wanted it. And Mortal Kombat 2 is probably the game that I played more than any other game for Sega Genesis. What's interesting is I guarantee it's a game that does not hold up as well. It's a game that doesn't age as well. It's probably a game, if I were to revisit all my old Genesis collection, I would probably not play it that much now. But we're kind of ranking what defined us, you know?
Right.
And I spent countless hours in having sleepovers where I would either pack up my Genesis and take it to friend's house, or they would come over and we would just play Mortal Kombat 2 over and over and over, trying to unlock the characters like... who are the characters in Mortal Kombat 2? I believe Reptile may have been in that one. Noob Saibot was, you know, of course, the mythical guy that we never actually truly got. But Katana, Melina, Jade, Scorpion, Smoke, Reptile, Sub-Zero, so many characters. Another arcade port that was super fun in the arcade, but the fact that you could play it at home, it was just a no-brainer to have this game. And, gosh, I loved it. And I was pretty good at it, too. I was one of the better ones. Like, I could beat most of my friends. And I'm sure that does not hurt it being number one on my list.
Sure. Yeah, I always found that I was better at it than, like, Street Fighter, too.
Yes, same here. Yeah, which is funny because the combos were a little trickier. Like, Street Fighter is basically down to right and your button. You
right.
know? Whereas, like, to do a fatality on Mortal Kombat, it's like back twice, forward twice, up, down, up, down. All three buttons at the same time. You know?
Yeah, I was bad at those, but I could use my Ryu fireball thing to, you know, throw the spear as Scorpion or Sub-Zero. It's like your go-to move is, oh, I'm familiar with this.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sub-Zero was basically like an evil, you know, Ken or Ryu, you know? So,
right.
But yeah, I just remember so many times, like, this is a game where we would, one of the first games I remember just sitting and watching other people play. You know, we'd take turns, and we'd play the two-player mode and just put the second remote down because we want somebody to win so they could practice the fatalities.
Sure, you know? Sure. I love that, yeah.
Yeah, we just desperately wanted to see them all, and, you know, we had to have somebody who had the fastest fingers and stuff, you know. It was just, I just remember, like, eruption, like, cheers of eruption when we actually managed to, like, have Scorpion eat someone's body and spit out his bones and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a game that, it's funny, you know, nowadays people talk about video games, you know, being violent and causing problems, which I think is a lot of bull crap, but this is not a political podcast, but...
Right. I would agree with you, but...
exactly. But, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, when I was in seventh grade, I played a game where you punch someone in the chest and rip their heart out of it. You know? So, They've been here for a long time. On the same system that had Sonic the Hedgehog, so.
Right, right.
But yeah. Mortal Kombat 2 is, to me, the very definition of a game that defines an experience. Because, it's again, as I said, it's not a game I'm dying to ever play again. Because I think it might just ruin it for me. You know, it might just ruin the memory. So it's almost kind of like, I'm fine with them being in a glass case by themselves forever.
Sure.
So.
Now, have you played any of the future iterations, any of the ones that have come out for PS4?
Yeah, the PS3. Most recent one I played was the one that had DC characters as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're still
I think it was
fun.
DC versus Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, they're fun. They're so advanced now, you know, like the combos and stuff are so much bigger than anything I could do. And I think the fun of Mortal Kombat was sitting with other people and playing. And, you know, at 38 years old, it's a little harder to get a bunch of friends over for a sleepover.
Sure.
Hey guys, let's all sit down and play Mortal Kombat.
You know? Right.
but I have played them, and they're still fun to me. They're more like fun for a few minutes. You know, like I don't think that I'd buy any of them. If game rental was still kind of a available option, I might rent a Mortal Kombat, have some fun with it, smash some people up, and take it back and be done with it. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, Mortal Kombat was huge on the, you know, we talked about NBA Jam being such a huge home release for consoles, and Mortal Kombat was right there too. And you know, Nintendo at the time where they were, well, we talked about political, you know, and they had, you know, some hearings and things to talk about video game violence and, you know, games on the Sega CD like Night Trap and stuff like that, and, you know, what we're exposing our youth to, Joe Lieberman. And you can find those videos on YouTube of, you know, if you enjoy senators today talking about shit they don't know, like Facebook, you should listen to them talk about video games in the mid-90s. Right. And so Nintendo, but their boast was like, well, we have that game, but we don't have blood. And guess what? Boy, it didn't. I mean, look, again, if you had Super Nintendo, you had to get it for it. But if you had the choice, it had sold much better on the Genesis, and Sega whooped them with that.
Yep.
No, I do think, from a Street Fighter standpoint, again, not to, I'm not talking about Street Fighter 2 today for the Genesis. There were a couple iterations. It eventually did make its way over. It started on the Super Nintendo.
Sure.
You know, I think that was better on the Super Nintendo, but
I do too.
Capcom was a good programmer for the Super Nintendo, but but for Mortal Kombat, it was a no-brainer to be on the Genesis.
I think a big reason Street Fighter transferred better on the Super Nintendo was, remembering the arcade version, there was 6 buttons.
Sure.
And so with the Super Nintendo, you had the 4 buttons and the 2 triggers. So it was just a little easier port, whereas Genesis just had A, B, and C.
Right. And so Genesis would eventually do that. Well, actually, they introduced the 6-button controller because of when they brought that game over. But there were other ways you could play it on a 3-button if you really like awkward directional button hitting to do powerful
and
kicks.
Who doesn't?
Right. I still have my 6-button Genesis controller. Actually, it's one I use.
Really?
Even though, you know, I'm playing, you know, Turtles Hyperstone Heist, and only uses 2 buttons, but there's 4 other ones there for you.
So here's a question: A, B, and C were the buttons. What are the 3 extras? Is it 1, 2, 3?
X, Y, Z. I think.
X, Y, Z. Okay.
Right. Let me look here real quick. 1 second.
Okay. I've always wondered, like, what the rationale is behind naming the buttons A, B, C, X, Y, Z.
That was terrific radio. X, Y, Z is what it is.
There. I was doing a nice little soliloquy while you were gone.
Good. I hope you did.
X, Y, Z. Okay. Interesting. I don't think I ever had the 6 button. I remember it, but I didn't have one myself.
Yeah.
Genesis. So.
Yeah.
But yeah. If you remember, too, Mortal Kombat 1 obviously had blood and fatalities as well. With Genesis for Mortal Kombat 1, the standard mode had the blood off, and you had to go into the settings and turn it on.
Sure.
But Mortal Kombat 2 was just like, nope, here's your blood, you know?
Yeah.
So, and there's buckets full of it, so. And if you're listening and you never played the Mortal Kombat, you're like, what's a fatality, what's this or that? I mean, imagine being 12 and hitting a guy with an uppercut off a bridge, and he falls 30 feet. And is impaled on spikes.
Right.
And imagine the joy that brings you at 12 years old.
And the joy of going through the back of your GamePro magazine and pulling up the codes on how to do all those.
Yep.
And again, you had to win the match, and then you could do the fatality. So there was a, you know, you got the gameplay in, and then you had that cool kind of extra step, and it was huge for the time.
Yeah, and it was a decent single player game too, because you know you had to go enter the tournament, and there was some story mode to it. You had to fight Shao Kahn, and Goro was part one, but I believe his name was Kintaro in Mortal Kombat 2. Basically, Goro. You know,
Shenlong was still like the end of one, right? You had to beat Goro first to get to him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in part two, it was similar. Goro's gone, but it's still Shao Kahn's bodyguard, which is I'm almost positive it's Kintaro. You know,
okay.
That's my guess. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm sure somebody will schmuck me that, but
there's a verb we haven't used in a while.
No.
I played a little bit of two, but I actually remember really playing a lot of one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And playing a lot of one on the Sega CD, which seems like a terrible decision, although the audio was good from like a loading standpoint.
Sure.
But they just happened to be like what I had. I played a ton of that first game. I think every character I could get pretty far into with, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and two had obviously new characters, and it was missing a couple from one. Kano was not in Mortal Kombat 2. And I believe it's Sonya, the girl, was not in Mortal Kombat 2. So.
And now 3 came out for 16-bit systems too, right?
Yes, I remember 3. My friend had that, and that's where these games started to go a little beyond me. That's where the combos really started to play a factor, and you know, 8, 9, 10 hit combos, and I just never was able to really pick up on those that well. So,
and there were a lot of fighters too. And again, look, that certainly is a selling point, especially at a young age. Like, oh wow, I can play as all these guys. But you know, there was something kind of, you know, quaint about the 10 guys in just the first one that you could play as versus kind of be inundated, kind of, you know, having 50 choices, the paralysis of choice, you know, versus just these 10 that you're familiar with, for sure.
And last thing I'll say on Mortal Kombat before we get to your number one as it relates to Street Fighter is Mortal Kombat the movie is infinitely better than Street Fighter the movie. So,
agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, Mortal agreed. Kombat 2, my number one for the Sega Genesis system.
Yeah, that's a great choice. And so you can, you know, Acclaim, and I'm trying to think of who has the license now. That's terrible. But they've repackaged some of those older ones. I don't know how they hold up either. It's always been something where it's like there was a Mortal Kombat arcade like release for PSN that had 1 through 3 and 4 and I mean there's probably podcasts out there that go into like the differences between like 2 was incredibly hard, like almost like cheap hard on the Super Nintendo, so it wasn't any good. The arcade versions are pretty good and balanced, but so they're out there on collections, and they've been in different Acclaim or Midway, you know, Midway's who had it then, different collections out there too. So you can go back and play them. I have not revisited them myself since the mid 90s. So yeah,
neither have I, outside of the DC game. So, but we are almost done here. We've just got one more, and it's your number one.
Yeah. So my number one is, so I talked a little bit before about how, you know, I was really into PC games at this time, so it was kind of like once you played games like Doom or Wolfenstein, and then you would go back and kind of like, or really RPGs too. So it kind of hinted at on the Nintendo episode where like, yeah, they would bring games like Might and Magic to the Genesis, but it was so much better on the PC. Like, why would I ever want to go play these games on the Genesis? So I mainly just played sports because those games weren't as good on the PC or as supported. And two-player was a part of it too. And so it's obviously easier on a console. And so my number one was kind of the pinnacle of sports gaming for me on the Genesis, and that was Coach K's College Basketball. And it seems like a weird pick, and it's very sentimental too, in that, one, it only came out on the Genesis. Two, it hit exactly into, again, to my years where I am completely into sports, totally into college basketball, you know, right around that time with Villanova. And, you know, it's got their great team from 93, 94 that's in there, and it had the players, but just the numbers, and obviously there's been lawsuits since then. But it was so unique because it was only the 1 year, and they made the game, and then they all moved on to I guess the PlayStation March Madness games that came out years later, but it kind of was like a unique enigma of a sports game that had college plays, college defenses. It had Coach K on the cover. It had a couple classic teams like the Duke title win teams from the early 90s. And you could see like, oh, wow, there's Cherokee Parks. Like, I know who these players are. They just have the numbers, you know. And we played that game, and I took my Genesis to college with me before PlayStation came out. Well, before I got a PlayStation, it had been out. And you know, that was a game we still played. And then it was a game that still, even years ago, I would break out like every March, you know, just sitting in my office and working from home and be like, you know, I'm going to play college. I'm going to go through with Tim Duncan, who for the longest time was like the last active NBA player that was in that game on Wake Forest. And you could play a full season. And then you would go on to the tournament, and I remember playing like full seasons and never being able to beat Arkansas in that game. They were they were the number one team, and so you'd have the same sting of like watching a season and losing in the you know, watching your team on TV lose, and you're like, oh my god, I made it to the Elite Eight in this game, and I lost, and now my season's over. And so it was really impactful for me, and it's still probably, I would say, you know, my favorite game. And so and that's really where kind of, you know, like I said, I played a ton of sports games on there. I forced a lot of friends to play sports games. And you know what? Looking back, I apologize for that. You know, to my non-sports buddies that were like, do we really have to play Joe Montana Sports Talk 2 or Sports Talk Baseball or whatever it was? You know, it's like, I'm sorry that you were a good friend, right? We teach my daughter, you know, to, you know, let your friends pick. And so, but looking back to that, and that's really, that's where Genesis kind of comes into me. It was just, like I said, yeah, so much of my percentage of the time was sports games on there. And I'll talk about them a little bit when we some other ones when we get to our honorable mentions. But and that's really kind of peaked into with Coach K college basketball for me.
Yeah, this is a game that I've never played, but I long for the day when another college basketball game comes out. I had a college basketball game for – there was a Super Nintendo college game that wasn't that great. It was okay. But I remember playing the heck out of it. I think mine was PlayStation 1. That probably expanded to a lot more teams, correct? Whatever.
Yeah, they eventually
like had all of NCAA Division 1.
Yeah, eventually, like the PS2 games, like NCAA 2K, whatever, up through 2K8 when they stopped making them. They would have every team. Yeah,
that was some of the most fun I've ever had in a sports game. For me, with sports games, I know when you think of sports video games, I think Madden is probably what comes to most people's minds because it's the most successful, but basketball games have always been my favorite.
Same.
I mean, yeah, probably because basketball is my favorite sport, but I just think they play the best as well. You know, I think they play, in a way, the most realistic, and I like the career modes as well. So this is a game that's just, I guess, out of my window. I never had it. I've heard of it. I've never played it, so I don't have a lot to add to it other than I can echo the sentiments of, you know, playing a whole season. And now, who was like the bad team on there?
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because they picked 32 teams during the game, and then there were some licensing issues, which like North Carolina and Georgetown weren't in the game. Oh. They wouldn't lend their license to it.
Okay,
which stunk because that was like Stackhouse and Rasheed Wallace and Allen Iverson.
Oh wow!
And so, so like the worst teams in there were like probably Cal. Let me think some of these other bottom ones. Clemson was in there, I think.
Because my thing was always, I'd like to take those teams.
Right, that was part of the fun. Yeah. I did that with football. When we get into future shows like NCAA football, I would be like, all right, time to play my Temple Dynasty. Yeah. You know, like
whatever game it was, I think it might have been 2007 college basketball that I played the most. I, for whatever reason, I'm a big fan of Middle Tennessee State. Like, there it was always the team that I just took. Like,
that's how I learned what they were through video games.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah. I would never know that that's a university. You could just make up a direction and a state and an ending, and I'd be like, yeah, that sounds like a real college. You know?
Yep, yep.
But yeah, I loved the experience of taking that team and beating the Dukes and the Carolinas. So, yeah, and I can only imagine, you know, and I was in my 20s at that point. I can imagine if I was, you know, significantly younger, the fun that would have. So
sure,
yeah, I wish I could add more to that game. I've never played it though. So
well, and I kind of I'll segue a little bit with other college games. So like I was really close to putting, I didn't want to all do all sports, but I was really close to putting like college football on here too. Yeah. Because that was College Football USA 96, which was the EA college football game when they moved from the Bill Walsh name, that had every team in it. So that was where, like,
incredible.
I learned, like, where those teams were and what they were. And you would take them through, and they would be terrible. But there was so much play time. Yeah. And that was really close to me having in here. But I wanted to talk about kind of, you know, replayability and what I've still caught up with, and, you know, and hoops being a favorite. But those college football games, I loved doing that in the 16-bit era.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I haven't really... I think NBA Jam is my first sports game that I've listed, but I've always been a sports game fan. I know when we get to Super Nintendo, I know one sports game that is getting listed. I won't reveal that right now,
right.
But it's funny. As I get older, sports games are more influential. So when we get to PS2, 3, that's where you're going to see a lot of heavy sports on my list, probably.
Okay.
We'll see when we get there, but... one of my favorite parts of these shows is talk about our honorable mentions, man.
Yeah. So, let's do some name dropping. What are some other names that were close to your list
you have memories of? That we already talked about. NHL 94 is on my honorable mentions, as well as X-Men. But a couple games that came real close were Tasmania, which is a Tasmanian Devil video game. Just remember, yeah, a lot of fun with that one. There was a game that I couldn't list, in all honesty, because I don't remember it enough. But when prepping this list, I kind of Google like best Genesis games just to see if something like sparks a memory. You know?
Sure.
And yeah, one that did, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot how great that game was. It was called Quackshot. It's a Donald Duck game. And your response is exactly what mine was. I'm like, oh yeah, I played that game. And I remember the picture is what really, because he had like a plunger gun.
Plunger gun.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
I never played it, but I remember, like, again, so we talked about the Latin. This is a good segue, right? So like in the later part of the 8-bit eras and really into 16, it's like Capcom made really good Disney games, yes, with their Disney license. Again, you know, they made Mega Man already, so like they had the idea how to make a good platformer, and like Darkwing Duck was like really good on Nintendo, and they had pushed it. And so when they got into the 16-bit era, I mean, they made really good Disney games.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, there was another Genesis game that was Mickey, like Castle of Illusion,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more on the portables episode.
Oh, cool.
But like Castle,
okay,
of Illusion and Land of Illusion,
okay,
are really, really strong platforms. And they remade Castle of Illusion for the PS3 360 online too. Like, they remade it.
Cool.
And I really enjoyed going back to playing that
did
again.
Did that come out around the time when that Mickey Paint game came out?
Yes, okay, it did.
Yeah, because it sounds, yep, similar. So
yes, that was Epic Mickey, was the Mickey Paint
Epic
game.
Epic Mickey, that's right.
And everybody at the time really just wanted them to remake Castle of Illusion, and they eventually did for the 3DS, and it didn't particularly get great reviews. But they've kind of, people have always, it's called Epic Mickey 4. I'm looking at it on my shelf,
yeah,
right now.
It is. I remember that now.
They made it in the vein of that Castle Illusion because everyone was so nostalgic for those 16-bit platformers that they made with Disney.
Right. A couple more I had was, mm-hmm, Toe Jam and Earl 2.
Mm-hmm.
Just another kind of like Earthworm Jim, and like it's goofy humor, but I just think Earthworm Jim did it better, and the gameplay itself was better. Toe Jam and Earl was a little weird at times, a little confusing.
That was a confusing one. That was that made my honorable mention list too, for just being so unique to the,
yes,
Genesis.
Absolutely.
You know, it was like, again, it was like a puzzle platformer. Not much of a platformer. It was a collectathon, or maybe a puzzle collecting,
yeah,
type game.
Stuff. Mm-hmm.
And then you would go up to different levels and drop it off. And I never got too far in it. That's a game I actually wanted to revisit. And I know the second wasn't that good, but recently, there's going to be a third one because that license got,
really,
sold, and I know that the developer actually is Adult Swim Games, and that's going to be out,
okay,
soon. It's like a new Toe Jam and Earl game.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I have two more on my list.
Okay.
One is a game that I don't know if anybody's ever played this, but it was one of those games that, you know, like I said, you have the money to buy a game, you go to the store, and you're a kid, you don't want to walk home with money in your pocket, you want to walk home with a game in your hands. And I picked up a game called Pigskin Football, which is...
That's funny,
did,
yeah.
Did you play that one?
You know what, I've never played it, but
it's like,
yeah, Jerry Glanville's Pigskin,
yeah,
Football. Wasn't it like Vikings and,
yep,
stuff
it's
playing?
It's like Vikings, and so like you hit each other with weapons, and there's trap doors, and just goofy. It's not real football, you know, but it's... it's just mash buttons, kind of like we mentioned earlier. It's like a sports game where non-sports fans would play it.
Yeah, so it was like a Mutant League Football.
Yeah.
Made by someone else, obviously. Yes. It wasn't an EA game. Mutant League was actually EA. Yeah. They just skinned their Madden game to be that. But yeah, I remember Pigskin. I never played it, but actually, it's funny. I got it in like a lot of sports games.
Oh, okay.
Years back when I was reviewing them. And I actually just, not to put too much of a timestamp on this, I'm actually selling it, and the lot should go today on eBay. So it is one of them. It actually has, mine's not in great shape, but it's complete, but it actually holds some value, like in like the $20, $30 range, just from a rarity standpoint. So
interesting. Cool. And the last game I'm going to mention is, it's interesting. Interesting how this has worked out. We're in our third episode, and every time I've told a story about my dad, and I never realized the connection my dad and I had with video games, but my dad's, probably his all-time favorite video games were Castlevania, which you talked about last week, and Michael Jackson's Moonwalker for the Sega Genesis.
Nice. Yep.
You remember last week I said my dad kind of kept up with us, and then he just stopped at Genesis while we moved on. Michael Jackson's Moonwalker was like his game that he played over and over, and it's actually not a terrible game. It's stupid. I mean, in concept, you're Michael Jackson. You have to dance people to death, you know, to save like the kids from the orphanage from an evil Joe Pesci.
Yes,
and none of that's made up either. But it's fun enough, you know. It's challenging. It's not terrible. What I never liked about it was the last level is so different from the rest of the game. Like all of a sudden, you're in a spaceship shooting other spaceships. You know, but
yeah, that is weird, right?
But when I think of Genesis, like my first thought is Mortal Kombat 2 and Moonwalker. Those are the two games that I think of with Genesis. But more because my dad played it to death. I didn't play it as much, but I wanted to just give it an honorable mention there. So that's my near make list.
Yeah, I remember that Michael Jackson's Moonwalker made both of our honorable mentions list when we did our top 10 16-bit games, which was a wild shot, one in a million, really, with how many games were out there that they would both be the same number on ours or the Moonwalker. Same thinking. And I still have a copy of it. I bought it back because we had a friend, and she was like super into Michael Jackson, and I found it in a pre-owned thing and got it. And I remember playing it a little bit. I remember playing the arcade game more.
Yes.
And beating the arcade game because you could just pump quarters in and it was fine. The arcade game was pretty good. And so I actually still have that one. And when when he passed away, that really shot up in value too. It's one of the more pricey games for the Genesis, and certainly unique to that system, man. That is a unique Sega Genesis game.
Yeah, and that's a game that's probably never going to see the light of day in a re-release or anything like that because not just with the licensing, but obviously with Michael Jackson, his name doesn't quite mean as much as it did before. So
right, that would be correct.
So, how about you? What are some of your games that came real close?
Yeah, so it's funny you'd mentioned the Taz, right? So we had Taz Escape from Mars, which was like the sequel to the Tasmania, and it's because Taz was. He may be there with Earthworm Jim for most 90s, and so he had a lot of 16-bit games, and it's interesting when I've been clearing out some of my stuff is that it's very hard for me to get to move on from, like, for some reason we did have some non-sports games, so I had, like, Animaniacs, and I had Star Trek The Next Generation, which, again, was like,
I've seen picture evidence.
Hey, maybe this will be good. No, I really like PC games. What's that?
I have picture evidence that you own that one.
You do, yes, and I was bragging to Glenn for his affection, and so, but I remember, again, though, like, I played it, and I'm like, I'd just rather play these Dungeons & Dragons games on, you know, the PC,
right.
Like, and not that that is, but, like, the same type of adventure-type game, which is so hard with a controller, it just didn't appeal to me,
right.
But then I had, actually, so Streets of Rage is one I wanted to talk about.
Yes.
Fantastic beat-em-up series. I didn't have with a foreshadow again, so maybe it's not going to be as entertaining, but our portable show is going to be a combo, so it'll be fine, but that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
And I really liked that series is great. 1, 2, and 3 are fantastic. Mm-hmm. Top games on the system. They've been re-released on every Sonic's Genesis Ultimate Collection and stuff, so you can find them pretty easy. But that was my one really, really big honorable mention that I wanted to make. And then other sports games ones that hit some high notes on are, you know, World Series Baseball 95 was the okay. You know, with how generations in gaming goes is that, you know, the Genesis may have been around for NBA Live 98, but really, like, the best version was 96 or 95 even, because then all the top teams were already going to the next-gen system. So World Series Baseball 95 was probably, like, the peak of that game, Sega Sports, and awesome, awesome game. And then, but everybody has their own baseball, right? Like, so Hardball 94 was one that I wanted to mention as it nearly made my list because we were so into customizing teams, right? We talked about that on with Baseball Stars and the Nintendo episode. And with Hardball, it had all the real players, but it didn't have the MLB license. But you could edit everything in that game. So, like, I would play, like, full seasons as, like, the real Baltimore Orioles. Yeah. And you could just – you could change everything. And back then, I was, like, obsessed with – this is a realistic box score. I just played this baseball game and I lost 5-3 and we each had 9 hits. It wasn't like some arcade type game. And as an adult now, maybe I like arcade games more. But back then it was like, I really want this like diehard simulation experience.
Yes.
So Hardball 94 was one for me for sure. But you know, everybody may have their, you know, I played a lot of MLB baseball and Triple Play came along and a lot of people like Tony La Russa baseball, EA's baseball for a while there too.
Yep.
And then I'm skipping NBA hoops because I'm going to talk about them on our next show.
Okay.
Cool. And I think that's it for one of Madden 94, but Madden 96 actually was it sticks out a lot to me because it was really the first like the game came out and it was like I want this for Christmas. So like I'd had the system for like a year, but it was like brand new. So like I want to pay like full retail. Like, can I have this for Christmas? And I got it. So like that was one game where I was playing it when everybody else was. A lot of these other ones I was catching up.
I'm still
as you are wont to do when you're younger and don't have your own means of income. So
I'm stunned that you said that NBA Live 98 was on the Genesis. Is that right?
It is right. Yep, I'm looking at it right here, buddy.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it is right because when you think about it, like decades later, you're like, oh, this game must be amazing. And look, it's fine, but it's the same skin as 96. They didn't add anything in 97, 98, just roster updates. Maybe like maybe the menus are different, but I mean, it's the same game. Just it has Tim Hardaway on the Heat, you know, so that's it. And he's on the cover. Right. Yeah, 97 and 98 were the sports games on the Genesis. And you think about the Saturns out at the same time. So, and it's got a bunch of those games too. So, you know, which ones are going to have more effort put into? I mean, from the Sega teams.
Was PlayStation 2 out by that point?
PlayStation 1 came out in the end of 95. So, you know, with PlayStation, famously, like, the 96 EA games were a hit and miss. Or 97. So it was 96 it was out. Because I know, like, Madden 96 didn't make it to the PS1 and that was like a big deal that they missed it.
PS2 release date is 2000. Okay.
Yeah, PS2 was 2000. Like NBA Live 96 made its way to the PlayStation, but I know like Madden didn't.
Okay.
So yeah, so you're thinking about these Genesis games. NBA Live 98 is coming out, and NBA Live 98 on the PlayStation is one of my favorite games ever. So
yeah.
So they were still making them. People were still buying them, I guess. So let me really quick talk before we wrap is on. So let's talk about some of the peripherals. And I had these only because I was kind of like a retro game collector before people even thought to do it. But like we would go to like video stores that would have like used video games because they would just be trying to move them. And, you know, KB Toys has been a real theme of ours. We talked about it last episode. And I remember going there before Christmas. And, like, they just had stacks of Sega CD systems, and they were, like, $30. And I was like, well, I'm going to buy this. You know, I'm, like, 16 at this point, probably. I'm driving, so I'm definitely 16, almost 17. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy this because I'm going to go and get these really cheap Sega CD games, and I did. And that's where I played Mortal Kombat, and I had Sonic CD, which is actually a really good game for it. And I would drag my sister with me, and we would go to different video stores and – or I would after work, you know, and kind of pick out these old games for it. And so I had. Did you ever have the Sega CD?
I did not have the CD. I had Sega 32X.
Nice. So that's a good segue. So the 32X was my favorite buy ever. They were at Toys R Us and they were $20 sitting in the middle of an aisle. It was like screaming, like, please take me. And that's one that actually has earned its, you know, I'm hesitant to sell them even though I haven't hooked them up in 20 years, sure. You know, but they actually have commanded some resale value. And yeah, the 32X, I had that, and actually that had a great version. It had the best version of Mortal Kombat 2. I played that on
Didn't
there.
Didn't even have it.
And it had a great version of NBA Jam Tournament Edition on there. And actually, I played Virtual Racing was my favorite game on that system. That also came out in the Genesis, but the 32X could really chug it. It was a really good racing game.
My go-to game was Slam City with Scottie Pippen.
Yes, I'm looking at that. I actually have that Sega CD 32X game, Slam City.
What's weird is I remember owning it, but I couldn't tell you anything about the WWF game. WrestleMania, I believe it was. Maybe it was called Raw. Gosh, what was it called?
I think Raw definitely came out for the 32X.
I remember having it, but I don't remember anything about it. So, very forgettable game, I guess.
And one of the other staples for me was Virtuator. That was the first Virtual Fighter game of that franchise was the 32X. Again, this is Sega pumping their own money into their dying system and trying to, you know,
you don't need a new console, just buy this thing that plugs into your current one.
And if you had a Genesis one, you had to have this special, like, you know, metal thing to put in so you didn't fry it. And it was a little complicated, to be honest. They don't make, and it's a little flighty. And actually, that cord that goes from the 32X to the Genesis is, like, so expensive nowadays to find standalone to be able to make that thing work. So
it's interesting that there's people out there still playing their 32Xs. Like,
It had a small run of, like,
But
I think it was, like, 42 games in the U.S. that came out for it. So, like, you see, like, some collectors who may have that as a subset. And there's some games on it, like the Spider-Man Web of Fire game. Mm-hmm. Game commands, like, $300 complete.
Good Lord.
If you had it. You know, you just said limited releases, and then people go back and try to get them later.
Sure.
I don't have anything. I had the Star Wars arcade game for 32X.
Oh, that was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
It wasn't, again, I talked about kind of, you know, I wanted to play PC CD-ROM games, so the Sega CD was not working for me.
No.
Although it was cool to play, like, NHL 94 on that system. I had that, too. But the 32X had a couple, like I said, Virtual Racing, Star Wars Arcade, like the Mortal Kombat 2. It actually did arcade ports pretty well, because it was a souped-up, super powerful 16-bit, and it could do most of them at the time, so...
Yes. Yeah, that's the only one I had. I did have a friend who had Sega CD, but I don't really, I can't contribute much to my memories there.
And the last portable or kind of deviation from the Genesis was the Nomad. So I had a friend who had a Nomad, which was the portable Genesis, where literally it was like a brick that you put the Genesis games into, and it had 6 buttons. And I remember playing in this car. And Street Fighter, of all things. And, you know, it had a smaller screen. And, boy, it had a high price point. I mean, it didn't sell well at all. I always thought it was ideal, right? Because at the time, you look at releases and be like, oh, this game's coming out for Game Gear. But it's never as good and it's limited, you know, compared to the Genesis version. But here it was a Genesis that you could take that was literally a Genesis. It was literally a portable Genesis. So
I did not have one either. From what I remember is that the battery life would just...
Oh, it was awful. Yeah, you had to have it plugged in or in like a car adapter.
You're basically playing on a home console with batteries.
Yeah. So it was chugging. It took a lot, that's for sure.
Ambitious, we'll give them that.
Yeah, absolutely. But it ridiculously expensive. It was at least $200, maybe even more when it first came out. And you're talking about a system that's been out since 89. And at that point, it's like people are moving on. They're not looking for ways to dump more money into the 16-bit era. So,
honestly, the Game Gear was not – it's not like the Game Gear was lacking, you know, I don't think, as a handheld system. I mean,
it was 8-bit, so that was – so that's where
– I think compared to the Game Boy, though, Game Gear just shines.
Sure.
So, well, I guess we're leaking into another episode now at this point.
It's for another day.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was that is our Sega Genesis show. What, any other comments you want to make on the system or Sega there in the 90s?
Not much, other than I kind of miss the Sega systems. I always thought they were unique in their own way. You know, with Nintendo, it was kind of like Nintendo variations of everything, which is kind of interesting. The Nintendo has kind of taken that mantle of being the outlier here. But like as we talked about, the 32X, the Sega CD, the Nomad, these are all things that were just really outside the box concepts that nobody else was doing, or maybe nobody else wanted to do. And I think Sega always tried that. Even with the Dreamcast, I mean, that remote, Dreamcast remote alone is just such an odd thing to look at.
You know? We're going to get to the Dreamcast.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that one.
That could be a longer show. It's maybe my favorite system of all time. That'll be a good one. Okay. That's for sure. So,
all right. Well, other than that, I believe we are going back to the world of Nintendo next, correct?
We are.
And we are going to make it a little super.
That's correct. So, all right, everybody. We'll see you then. Thanks.
Cool. Take it easy.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceforNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceFormation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceFormation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceFormation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.